right, Ron. The Penguins are off to a lousy start. They really are. They can't seem to settle on their defense at all. I don't have any idea what's going on with the Jack Johnson situation. I know Bob McKenzie said yesterday on a show called Insider Trading, I believe with Pierre Maguire, that the Penguins are shopping Jack Johnson and Eric Goodbranson. I hope word doesn't leak to the organization that it's out in the media again, or they'll play Jack Johnson for the next 80 games in a row, right? Of course, that would assume a playoff game, which I don't know is going to happen. No, they'll scratch him on the eve of the playoffs again.
Play them all 82 and then scratch them for game one. If they make game one. And
what are they doing, Ron, on defense? What are they doing?
It's a little frightening when Sid's talking about staying in the playoff race after three games. I have no idea. I have no idea why they played seven last night. I know they like Marino. They wanted to take a look at him, but how about sitting somebody?
Yeah, how about that?
You know, sitting a Jack Johnson. Take a look at Marino. You know, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. I don't get it.
How about going with the flow of where the NHL is headed these days and getting your younger, faster defenseman, which would be Ricola and Marino, into the lineup? Let's talk about that and all other Penguins-related issues with our friend Bob Grove. Hello, Grover.
Hey guys, great to be on with you.
It's greater to have you. How would you sort out the Penguins' defense, and why not scratch somebody? Are they afraid? I ask this in all honesty. Are they afraid in some way to hurt Jack Johnson, like he would take it personally? I mean, they already scratched the guy before a playoff game last year after he played right in every game.
Well, I'm with you. I don't understand dressing seven defensemen for that game. If you're going to put Marino in, put him in. Let him play. If you want to see what he's made of, and he's going to give him 18 minutes, not 10, what he played last night, you know. And he's a right shot. So, you know, are you going to take Goodbranson out? I don't know. Are you going to, how are you going to move these guys around? I don't get dressing seven last night. It didn't make any sense to me. Let's remember that, look, I'll tell you what, Marino, I thought he was really good in his first game. I mean, this kid can skate with the puck. He can move it. He jumps in on plays. He didn't look flustered. He looked poised. There were a couple times when he held on to the puck, you know, and waited for a play to come to him. All the good stuff you want. But and he looked good in the preseason. But the bottom line is, it is still an unbelievably small sample of games. So I don't know where they're at, how convinced they are that he's ready to be an every night player. Are they? I personally am shocked that he's not at the American Hockey League level getting some games in first. You guys know, for a kid to come out of college and make it to the National Hockey League and never play a game in the minor leagues, extremely rare, especially for a kid who got drafted in the sixth round, doubly rare.
I hear that. I do hear that, Grover. So there would obviously be risk there. But to me, I would choose that risk over the certainty that a Johnson-Goodbranson pairing does not work in today's NHL. Would you agree with that? And what would your three pairings be?
Well, I agree. I completely agree with that. I think everybody had the same notion. If you put those two guys together as your bottom pair, you are going to spend a lot of the game in your own end. And they did this against Columbus, and actually those guys fared okay. And Columbus is not, they've taken a major step backward. They played the night before. Their rookie goalie was so bad, it took them right out of the game. So that's not really a good indication for me. And I don't think you can go into this season thinking that Johnson and Goodbranson paired together would be a good idea. So I would leave Pettersson with Schultz. And at the moment, I'd have Ricola playing with Goodbranson. But, you know, again, Marino's got to play the right side. That's where he plays. So if you're going to play him there, and let's remember, you know, Johnson and Ricola both have played both sides. In fact, you know, Ricola played a lot of right defense last year, and so did Johnson until about February. So there's all kinds of pieces you can move. But in today's game, where there's an emphasis on speed and puck movement, Ricola is always a better option. And, you know, again, if you're convinced Marino's the real deal and you want to keep him up, then play him.
Bob, no Malkin, no Rust, no Bukestad, maybe no Hornquist. We haven't heard any report for him not to come back last night. That foot or ankle had to be really bothering him. I don't know if you saw Sid's comment after the game saying, no one's going to feel sorry for us. This is tough collectively. We've got to get it done if we hope to stay in the playoff race. After three games, he's talking about hoping to stay in the playoff race. How much trouble is this team in right now?
Well, they're not. Look, when Sid says that, for me, what he's talking about is he knows that Bukestad and Malkin are out for weeks, and maybe at that point he suspects Hornquist is out for weeks. So he's not really talking about to stay in it after three games. He's talking about to stay in it for the first, you know, 5-6 weeks of the season. So I get that. I mean, look at what's going on in the division. I think I expected the Islanders to take a step back and Columbus maybe a bigger step back. But look at Carolina. I mean, they look like the real deal. We all know that Philadelphia, Jersey, and the Rangers are going to be better. I still don't think any of those teams are playoff teams, but they're going to be, if they don't make it, they're going to be much closer. So, and he knows that. He knows it's going to be a battle in the Metro because so many of these teams are really, there's not that much difference between a lot of them. So he's looking at, you know, where are we at by the time we get to mid-November and we just get Bukestad and Malkin back, and now are you going to miss Hornquist and Rust? I mean, my God, four of your top nine forwards out with injuries, potentially all of them, you know, for weeks on end. It's hard to believe it, but this is really kind of right now for me. If Hornquist is out for weeks, this is kind of like crunch time, like here in the second week of November.
Hornquist doesn't.
Or October, I'm sorry.
Apparently, they're reporting Hornquist does not appear to be practicing today. I guess that's not a real surprise, but I don't know if Sullivan will have any kind of update, Grover. I was there last night, and it just didn't look like a team capable of beating too many teams. I'm sorry. Sullivan said after the game the result didn't indicate the closeness of the game. He liked his team's effort. I can't go there with him.
Well, again, you have to look at it through the lens of who was available. But then the Penguins, for me, shot themselves in the foot by dressing seven defensemen. I didn't understand it, and I think it hurt them. And obviously there's a risk, and the risk came home, you know, whenever Hornquist got hurt. And then, of course, Aston Reese went off for a while there. They were down to nine forwards. And let's remember, for me, that, yeah, the Jets totally took their foot off the gas in the third period. Completely.
Two shots.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't even worried about scoring. They didn't need any more goals. So, you know, for me, this mishmash of dressing 7D, and so you got all kinds of different pairings on the back end of those seven guys, and then, of course, the forward lines were all moved around. And so, for me, when the Penguins the first two periods, they looked totally disjointed in their own end, for me. And this was a Winnipeg team that's got a defense that's, I mean, are you kidding me? If you could have put any kind of forechecking pressure on this defense early in the game and converted, look, you got the lead, but then you gave it away, you know, and so it should have been the Penguins spending a lot of time in the offensive zone, not the Jets, you know, taking advantage of mistakes that the Penguins made. I thought the Penguins were very sloppy again for the second time in three games so far this season in their own zone last night, and it cost them big time. Murray didn't have a good game. You know, Aston Reese had a giveaway. Good Branson lost a battle behind the net for the puck that led to the first goal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't look good last night for me.
Our hockey columnist here at 93.7thefan.com, Bob Grove, longtime Penguins observer. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7thefan, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, locations in North Huntington, the North Hills. What do you make of Dominic Cahoon so far?
Man, do they need a lot more from him. I mean, I'll give him that he's adjusting to a new team, and he's adjusting to being moved all over the lineup. You know, he starts camp. Remember the opening in camp? He was on Crosby's line, right?
Yeah.
And by the end of camp, and you know, he's on the fourth line, and then you start the season, he's down in the bottom six again, and he's playing both wings. I quite frankly, you know, based on what he gave Chicago last year, playing top 6 minutes, you thought this was going to work. You know, he's going to have a year of playing on a smaller rink under his belt, a year in the NHL under his belt. He comes to Pittsburgh, yeah, he's going to learn some new teammates like everybody does when they change teams, and then he would be off and running. But, man, they're not getting much at all from him right now.
Well, Tanev seems to have adjusted well. I really like his game, Bob. You know, we heard about the energy coming in. He had 9 hits last night, drew another penalty. I believe that's 4, right? Didn't he draw 3 in the first game? His speed, I like the way he is adjusted.
Yeah, no, he's been great. He's been as advertised. I mean, this guy just brings it. He brings it every shift. You know, he'll hit you, he'll block your shot, he'll beat you with speed. Again, I don't think Watching him, I'm just not sure he has the hands to get you 20, but, you know, he can get you 15 for sure, maybe more, you know, on a skill team. We'll see when he's given that role on a more regular basis. But this guy, for me, is everything advertised. He's going to be big to their penalty kill, and I thought he was good last night. And you know what? I thought Sid was the best player on the ice for the Penguins last night. Again, I mean, even through the first two periods, he was still he just was playing the whole rink. He was making great passes, and nothing was happening for that line very much. But you know, the Tanev and Crosby again for me were the best guys.
Grover, in the absence of Gino and perhaps Horny here for a while, how should the power play be configured, and who should be on it?
Well, I'm convinced that he's going to stay with Letang and Schultz. I get it.
Would you? That's what I'm asking, though. How would you configure it?
I would give those guys a run out together. I got to be honest with you. At the moment, I think it's so-so with those two. I mean, as you know, there's not that many teams in the NHL that play 2D anymore. A lot of them just go with one, and the Penguins have traditionally done that now for a number of years. But I'm okay
Can
with
I
getting
ask
Schultz
about Lang,
some more
or do you
time.
Have another hockey? Go ahead.
And I'm okay with trying those two together, and you know, just putting out Sid and Gensel and probably Galchenyuk. You know, but Galchenyuk's been playing. You know, look. He was a big power play point producer last year in Arizona, and he did all of his damage from the right circle, and I haven't seen him there much at all. So that's where I'd put him. But, you know, they had Gensel in the high slot yesterday, and he really wasn't a factor on the power play. And, you know, one of the things you have to think about, guys, with this power play is zone entry, because it's been a little bit of a challenge. So without Kessel to do that, and not that he was perfect at it, but he did it a lot of times. We've seen Sid doing some of it, and, you know, they may have to just kind of resort to doing it the old-fashioned way, just get in, dump it in, and go get it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that approach. It'll work as long as you put yourself out for it. So those are the guys I would put out on the power play.
Bob, it was Mike Lang night last night. What did you think, and do you have a favorite Lang memory, Lang story you can share?
Well, it was just... it was awesome, you know, and I had a chance to be in the building last night, and, you know, I can't say enough about, I mean, as far as the story goes with Mike, let me just tell you what an incredible honor and thrill it was for me to be this tiny little piece of the broadcast team that included Mike Lang. It was just unbelievable. I mean, I can still remember the day, guys, when I was a teenager in 1974, but I can remember sitting in my game room waiting for that opener to begin because I was excited about the new announcer the Penguins had, didn't know anything about him. But, you know, back then, remember, not every game was on TV. You know, some of them were, but a lot of them weren't. And, you know, most of us lived and died with the radio broadcast, and the guy who was calling the game was a big deal to us. And I remember sitting there listening to that particular game. And to work with him, to have the opportunity to work with him for those years, I'll never forget. You know, there was a night the Devils were playing here, and Marty Brodeur was chasing the NHL shutout record. And Mike said to me before the game, he said, "What do you do between periods? During the periods, you know, he knows what I do between periods. He says, "What are you doing? Are you working on anything?" And I'm saying, "Well, look, Mike, if you need me to research something, no problem." He said, "Well, I just wondered, you know, just wanted to see what you're doing, if you had anything going on." I'm like, "No, but you know, if you need something, just let me know." And, you know, I'm there doing my bit between periods on the network, and he taps me on the shoulder when I got done. He says, "Just stay there. Just stay where you're at." And Steve Mears came in, and Steve called the game for a period, and I did color on a radio broadcast of an NHL game for a period. That's Mike Lang.
That's pretty cool.
That is Mike Lang. I mean, he made you feel like a part of it. You know, he gave me some advice. You know, and he's the guy who would talk to the ushers, and he would talk to the guys in the press room, you know, all the people who work there. I mean, he just gets along with everybody, and he talks to everybody, and he makes you feel part of it all. You know, even though he's the star, and you know he's a star, he makes you feel like you're a big part of it even when you're not. And I'll never, ever forget that.
Well, I got to ask you, if my eyes deceive me, and among the many tributes they had, you know, moments of his career, was that a young Bob Grove sitting next to him in a convertible for one of the parades? And if it was indeed for one of the cup parades, what was it like going down the streets of Pittsburgh with Mike Lang next to you. Now, I'm sure they were yelling for you, too, but I'm assuming he got a few more yells.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what? That was me in the 09 Cup Parade, and what you know, what an incredible opportunity that the Penguins organization gave me. And when they asked me if I wanted to be in the car with the old 2-9er and Mac, I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you actually asking me?
What? Which one was that, Bob? Which cup?
09.
09, okay.
That was the 09 Cup. And, yeah, nobody was yelling for me, but it you know, to be in there with him just reinforced everything that I already knew in a different way, is to see the fan reaction as we went down the streets and everybody saying, you know, I love you, Mike, and, you know, I mean, there was such an outpouring of emotion from everybody to everybody in the Penguins organization and the players. But trust me that the fans along the road, along the streets, they let Mike know how much they loved him. And it was incredible to see. So what a day that was.
Great stuff, Grover. We appreciate you sharing those stories, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bob.
That was great stuff, Ron.
I saw him. I thought it was him. I mean, you know, I knew it was him. I'm thinking.
Mustache? Did he have a mustache back then, too?
I don't think he did.
How'd you recognize him without that?
It was just, I mean, I'm looking at Lang, but I see Grove right next to him, and Grove smiling and waving. I can only imagine what it would be like going down the street with Lang. Wouldn't
incredible.
That be something?
Yes. And getting to call a period of a game because Mike invited you to. That is awesome.